Hey, and welcome to Piloting Error, the show where we dig up shitty old pilots and watch them so that you don't have to. I'm Joe, and with me, as always, is Stuart.
Hello.
returning guest, my girlfriend, Cheryl.
Hey-o.
And a newcomer, one of my oldest friends, Christopher Day. Chris, how you doing out there?
Oh, I'm doing just fine. I want to thank you swell fellows for letting me join on here.
And thank you, Joe, for that lovely intro.
Absolutely.
And Merry Christmas, everybody! Merry fucking Christmas.
Merry Christmas!
I've been waiting all year for this.
I'm wearing fucking sleigh bells, walking under the mistletoe.
Oh my god, our whole house is just covered in tinsel. It's giving me a seizure just walking through the living room.
Yeah, I have both my fists in pies right now because I'm so fucking excited for Christmas. That's a tradition in your guys' families, right?
Yeah, the fisting of the pie.
Yeah, obviously.
You usually just sit in it.
Oh, that sounds nicer.
Yeah, I got pie in places. I don't know.
He's holding out on us. Get his pies.
And what better way to celebrate Christmas than with the 1988 Ralph Bakshi failed Nickelodeon TV pilot, Christmas in Tattertown.
It's the season, or just Tattertown, I guess.
Or Junktown.
Ooh, Junkville.
I thought it was Tatertown.
Christmas in Tatertown.
And I was really bummed out that it wasn't a family of potatoes.
It could be. There could be potatoes.
Oh. You know what? A couple of them do look like potatoes.
It's not out of the question. Before we get into Tattertown, and we'd be remiss if we didn't talk about another animated TV show that had a Christmas episode as a first episode.
That's right, The Simpsons.
This Christmas, The Simpsons, America's funniest new family, are giving the perfect gift.
Pantyhose.
No, their TV special is back.
Simpsons Roasting on an Open Fire debuted the year after Christmas in Tattertown.
So they stole everything from Tattertown.
Obviously, this was a huge influence.
So that's a gold mine. Yeah.
Definitely the same precision animation in that Simpsons pilot.
Beautiful.
Full body emoting. Who is Ralph Bakshi?
The god Ralph Bakshi.
Ralph Bacchio. What a guy.
He's not a good writer or director, but he is bold and innovative.
Yeah, he's very subversive. Fritz the Cat or American Pop or especially Coonskin.
Yeah.
Like, there's that subversive bent through just about everything that he made, minus probably Lord of the Rings.
He is a man who don't give a fuck. That's
no, funny. Absolutely.
You see Heavy Traffic or Coonskin, and you're like, a white man directed these, huh? Interesting. With like all black casts. Like, what is his power behind this? Like, how does he convince people of this?
He's beloved in the community.
Mm-hmm. Indeed.
He grew up in Brooklyn in the 1940s. One of the biggest themes in all of his work is these gritty urban environments where you have these different kinds of people clashing.
Oh, yeah.
I'm going to be honest and tell you that I don't know anything about this guy, really. Like, I did see American Pop many years ago. I thought he did heavy metal. I was just like, I don't know. Just weird animation with like big old titties.
I mean, that is Ralph Bakshi in a nutshell, so it makes sense. Yeah, except the titties are usually of cat variety. So, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, Ralph Bakshi, famously the inventor of furries.
Anthropomorphism is disturbing to me, and I hope you don't lose any listeners for me coming out and saying that.
Ah, god damn it.
I'm logging off right now.
I'm gonna get roasted by a bunch of Nazi furries.
I don't want to alienate them. There's a lot in Denver, and I don't want to lose any new friends I could be making.
A vibrant community.
Terry Tunes.
He got his start in animation at Terry Tunes, which was a notoriously cheap animation house. Paul Terry is cited as saying, "Let Walt Disney be Tiffany's. I want to be Woolworth's."
God, fucking jank. Jesus Christ.
The most famous Terry Toons character is Mighty Mouse.
Ooh, Mr. Trouble never hangs around. When he hears this mighty sound, here I come to save the day.
which Ralph Bakshi would return to in the 90s, and then also Heckle and Jekyll the Crows.
Oh, wow. I didn't realize that.
Which we have a Heckle and Jekyll pilot we might get to someday. That's where he got his animation chops and his real love of and sensibilities for the old style animation, which is very prevalent in this show.
Just about everything in this is a wink to other cartoons.
Big time.
There's a lot of references to the old Fleischer stuff, especially.
Mm-hmm. In fact, looking at the animation team behind this as well, just the animators and animated directors, like there was a mix of super young blood and then old timers as well, like Irv Spence. He worked with Ub Iwerks back at the dawn of popular animation. He did stuff with like Hanna-Barbera. He worked with Tex Avery, like directed the animation for Dumbhounded and the early Droopy shorts. So like this is a guy who actually literally drew many of the characters that Bakshi's referencing. So that was a hell of a cool thing to find out.
Wow.
Yeah.
Man, like an animator's animator.
Yeah. Dude was like in his 80s by the time that Tattertown came out.
Holy fuck. Yeah. A lot of those animation guys, they just like work until the day they die because it's such like a delightful line of work to be in.
Totally.
And you know, you probably don't make very much money doing it.
Hey man, here we are on the brink of the apocalypse, the eve of destruction, so to speak. And I can't think of anything to do.
Well, offhand, son, I'd say you have got a problem. Yeah. Ha ha. But at least you're honest. The revolution can use a man like you. Hey. Hop on.
He made a slew of movies there in the 70s. They were cheaply made, and that's why most of them turned a profit, even though they didn't really have a very good, like, strong narrative. But I think you guys hit on why they were so popular, because they were, like, X-rated and focused a lot on adult themes. Yeah. And were, like, mm-hmm. midnight movies.
Yeah, it was completely unthinkable. When Fritz the Cat came out, what in the fuck is this? No one had ever seen anything like it.
Yeah.
What I try to do very honestly was have animation grow up, do animation that I enjoyed, and have the same freedom that a novelist would have or Marty Scorsese would have in live action. I took animation to where it never went before, trying different subject matter to see how it would fit. I wanted to make very personal films.
I think like in the 60s, the quality of cartoon animation had just plummeted. It'd gotten so uncreative. It's just dog trying to kill a cat, trying to kill a mouse. We've got this art form that can do literally anything, and this is all we do with it. And that was just incredibly frustrating to him. He wanted to express all these big ideas and big emotions with animation, and nobody else was there.
Not in America, at least. Yeah. Maybe in Japan, but in Europe.
I don't know how they do things over in Japan, but in America, we do it like this.
Our cartoons are for babies here. Fucking Pacific freaks.
You know, when Fritz the Cat came out and it became this huge hit amongst the counterculture scene, he strikes me as the kind of guy who probably despised those people who loved his film.
Oh, yeah.
And yet he was like, I'm going to capitalize off this anyway. And in fact, I'm going to go that step further and make fun of them at the same time. The movie's a satire about this very counterculture movement, but it was embraced just the same because, I don't know, kiddies with tiggle bitties, you know?
What a real Kurt Cobain of animation.
There's no narrative to these stories. I mean, they just sort of float along most of the time. That's where he's the weakest. He's really good with the visuals and the music and putting all that together, but the narrative is always lacking.
Just hire a writer, for Christ's sake.
I think he's so hard to work with, and I also think he's also kind of a bully. I don't think anybody could possibly like rein him in.
He's like the wind. Who could possibly tame him?
The core theme of all Ralph Bakshi's work is unavoidable conflict, like the conflict between cultures and religion and the rich and the poor and the young and the old and the criminals and the non-criminals. He sees American society as an endless, absurd clashing of opposites. And that's what he's always trying to do. Every single movie he does, it's all about clashing opposites. I found this article from Animato magazine from 1988, where he talks about Tattertown. And he says, what I wanted to do was make something where old and new animation could clash head on, visually, stylistically, and in attitude. Tattertown is where old cartoons characters live side by side with new cartoon characters, and they all have a hell of a time relating.
Yeah, I didn't get that from that. I don't.
I got a little bit. There's a lot of the classic Ralph Bakshi, just like people talking over each other all the time, just pure chaos.
Yeah,
which I also love and hate about watching his movies, when sometimes people are just yammering about and you can't tell who's saying what in a Robert Altman way. But
yeah, oh yeah, that's what I was gonna say. Mash.
Yeah. And it seems like they're saying this is a town where trash comes to life, but there's old cartoon characters there. And like, that was really confusing to me. It's like a jumble of ideas.
The town where trash comes to life is actually my hometown. So, Tater Town, where I'm from.
I try to make a list of all the cartoon characters that pop up in this, and I'm no expert. So I saw Oswald the Lucky Rabbit.
No idea.
He was the proto Mickey Mouse. Bosco and Honey, the original racist Warner Brothers characters based on a minstrel act. Farmer Alfalfa, who was first Terry Towns character, who I think Ralph Bakshi actually worked on. Flip the Frog, who is Ub Iwerks at one point. Crazy Cat, who is a really old comic strip character. And Popeye, who you can see only in silhouette.
I missed Popeye.
I did too.
Just a silhouette.
Yeah.
Like in an alley?
Yeah. Yes, dear. Sailors only hang out in alleys.
If it's Bakshi, it's probably, going down on somebody in the back alley.
I know I've seen a lot of these animals and objects, and I just can't place them.
Like, I know, because I mean, how many cartoons did you guys watch as a kid? Because I watched so many, and like more random ones from different countries.
Yeah,
where it's like, I don't know what anything is, because I was introduced to so much shit as a kid that like everything kind of just blends together. And so a show like this is just like a mind fuck, honestly. Mm-hmm.
These characters haven't been on TV, like, I mean, in a very long time. I mean, these are really obscure characters from long dead animation.
I think something's changed though, because like, you know how like you like The Simpsons and it taught you a lot about like previous history, because there's so many like pop culture references and you're like, well, what does this mean? And then you have to like look it up. For some reason, like even in the 80s, a lot of the cartoons I watched were like deeply referential in like 1940s culture. That would make absolutely no sense to anybody. And I don't think that's something that like the current generation of children ever really have to deal with. Everything can be very topical and released very quickly.
I think it was generational, where filmmakers, animators, et cetera, were like taking from the images they saw as a child. And I mean, you see this with Bakshi, but like Scorsese and Spielberg even too. And to think of this show, I just realized, I'm like, oh, this show came out the same year as Who Framed Roger Rabbit,
oh, wow.
Which does the same thing with Toontown.
Yes, Tattertown and Toontown have a lot in common.
On a previous episode, we talked about Look Well, the Adam West, Conan O'Brien pilot. Mm-hmm. What's the other guy's name, Stuart?
Robert Schmeigel.
No one had been lampooning like the 1970s detective dramas that they grew up with. So they're like, oh, that's like the perfect premise for this silly pilot we want to do.
Nobody was thinking to try and mine these old cartoons at all. In fact, I don't think anybody really has. The only thing I can think of like contemporarily is that game Cuphead.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
It's all Fleischer. Mm-hmm.
It's still like a wealth of stuff that could be tapped, because it's such a weird era in animation where like everything comes to life. It's not like the 1940s Bugs Bunny type stuff. It's completely different.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, most importantly, they were for a much broader audience than stuff of Tattertown's mm-hmm. era. Mm-hmm. By the 80s, that was really when animation became like primarily viewed as being for children.
And to sell toys.
Yeah, to sell toys, exactly. Transformers, G.I. Joe, like, fuck was the plot of any of those shows other than, hey, buy...
You- it's true. It was just a means to mm-hmm. a consumerist.
You want to play with this ninja guy.
You should hear Ralph Bakshi ranting against, like, consumerism. How irresponsible it is to put toys mm-hmm. in cartoons.
It does strip it of artistic merit, basically. Like, I've created something just to completely sell out.
What I'm opposed to is when people other than cartoonists create a toy and then basically try to have a cartoon made about the toy, because that's a running commercial.
Does it hurt kids watching that stuff?
Of course it hurts kids watching that stuff. There's no love involved. You know what I'm saying? Love is a very important factor, and kids love Bugs Bunny. They love Mickey Mouse. They love Mighty Mouse. You know, it's got to be a question of loving something first, not a question of just being saturated. But these things aren't loved, and I think that's their great danger. You know, they're very cold items.
Joe, we both have history with this pilot. We both seen it on.
That's right.
When it was originally broadcast.
Yeah.
Nickelodeon.
I remembered it when I saw that fucking blue and pink dog, and I remember being a kid and seeing that, and it making me depressed. Like fucking like patchwork kind of dolls that just like immediately I'm just like, oh god, just depresses me immediately.
Have you ever seen the Raggedy Ann and Andy movie?
Richard Williams.
Who are you? I'm just a rag dolly, happy and smiling all day, all
of course I have. Fucking awful.
It's just batshit insane.
80s cartoons were crazy because that new Chipmunks one that is like hyper stylized animation. I feel like I'm the only one who ever sees this. Like, I bring it up all the time. People are like, I don't know what you're talking about. Like, I dreamed it. But, like, just really a wild plot that doesn't make a lot of sense. It's, like, around the world in 80 days but with chipmunks. And they're from Southern California.
Yeah.
That makes complete sense.
And, like, they're kind of hot. And that's kind of, like, fucked up. Like, the chipmunks are like, and they're supposed to be like adolescent.
Young
adolescent.
That fuckable little chipmunk. Wait, she's a mouse. I'm sorry, she's not a chipmunk.
No, she's a chipmunk.
Oh, are you talking about Alvin? I'm talking about Rescue Rangers.
No, Rescue Rangers is a whole other thing.
You're all fucking smoke show mouse.
Yeah, I thought you were talking Rescue Rangers, not the. Alvin and the Chipmunks and the Chipettes.
Yeah, it's Alvin and the Chipmunks and the Chipettes. And like,
yes, I know exactly what you're talking about.
That's amazing. Thank you for acknowledging that I am not crazy.
There's like a really racist scene where they're trying to escape from natives that are singing Woolly Bully.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
Oh,
yeah.
It's pretty horrible.
Mm. You can always count on the history of American animation being two things, horny and racist. So, you know.
Yeah, I wrote my fucking PhD thesis on the horniness of American cartoons.
In the 80s, Nickelodeon had a lot more of an edge than it does now.
Oh, dude, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You can't do that on television?
That is a mean-spirited show.
It is a hate.
I mean, you can only dump pig's blood on so many kids' heads. You know?
Yeah, how the fuck was that Canadian as well?
No, that seems deeply Canadian.
Weird.
Because Alanis was in it, right?
Alanis was on it, yes.
Alanis Morissette was in it.
Oh,
yeah.
Boy. Mm-hmm. Is that where she met
Dave Coulier?
Dave Coulier.
Dave Coulier. Dave Coulier. If I hear that name one more time, I'll scream.
Dave Coulier?
But Dave Coulier had a show on early Nickelodeon, too, called...
Out of Control! And now, here he is, the man who thinks Hawaii is how Norwegians say hello! The guy who owns 500 swimming suits, all the same color, our host, Dave Coulier!
Control, yes.
It was like a talk show, variety, like news magazine kind of show.
Interesting.
I think all of the episodes are up online. They only made like 25 episodes of it or something, and they just reran it over and over and over, and well into the 90s. We'll talk about it again because the Fred Newman shows up in it when we do Puppet Man.
Oh, God.
Puppet Man.
Yeah, feel free to come on for Puppet Man, Chris.
Gladly. Sold already. There's a lot of Rocco's Modern Life in this pilot, honestly.
Oh, baby, oh, baby, oh, baby.
Oh, yeah. That tracks.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
That tracks.
Absolutely.
Because, yeah, this would have been the dawn before all of the, like, mm-hmm. the Nicktoon stuff.
Yep. This was their first original animation that they had produced, and it's weird that they gave it to Ralph Bakshi.
Was it really?
Oh, yeah. Was it really?
I didn't realize it was the very first.
It was their very first, yeah, the original. Because, up till that point, they were mostly known for imported cartoons, so like Danger Mouse and Banana Man. Oh, my favorite, Banana Man.
But when Eric eats a banana, an amazing transformation occurs. Banana Man.
Yes, Banana Man.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, Banana Man. Danger Mouse was
there. The Little Prince. And
Oh, Little Prince. I remember that one.
They had that great Japanese Aesop's Fables show. That was fantastic.
Do you remember Belle and Sebastian?
Yep.
The Adventures of Sebastian and Belle. It wasn't Belle. It was Adventures of Sebastian and Belle.
Never watched it, but I am a huge fan of the band.
Me too. It's one of the positive stewards in the world.
One of my favorite bands. What? In the village, putting the
poster up, dreaming of it. So we were stationed in Georgia when I was a kid, probably I would say like 1985, 1986. And my dad recorded like a ton of things on VHS because the Philippines, there's only one US station and it's like the military station. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of a crapshoot. And so I rewatched a lot of like just like singular episodes of a lot of what y'all are talking
about.
That is
so cool. Wow.
Never watched like the full series. They're like bottled. That first episode of Mighty Mouse was one of those things. And I worshiped. Mm-hmm. That episode. I used to rewatch that VHS like all the time.
I was going to ask if you still had those VHS tapes because I really want to see it.
My number one question.
I'm pretty sure my dad has them unless he recorded over them.
Oh, sweet Jesus. Find them.
I'll see if I can find them.
I would kill.
Because like, they also has all the old commercials.
Find them. If you want 500,000 views on YouTube right away, go ahead and upload those.
Speaking of YouTube, let's talk a little bit about how we viewed this. There are currently two versions of Christmas in Tattertown up on YouTube, and one has only been up for 6 months and has 1,400 views.
Is it the higher quality one?
It's the one that has really excellent quality.
That's the one I watched.
Okay, that's what I watched as well.
In the top right hand corner, you can see the word Kiss Cartoon.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Ooh. Yeah. So Kiss Cartoon, Kiss Anime, Kiss Manga. They're very useful websites. If you want to watch stuff that either has not been released in the US, like had an official release, it has like a lot of fan sub anime.
Well, I'll be.
And then they have a lot of fan translated manga as well on Kiss Manga.
But I don't think this was taped off TV. I think the source of this was the original broadcast.
I think it is too. Yeah, because it has the commercial breaks.
Yeah.
Yeah, it has the Nickelodeon bumpers.
I'm thinking that it was probably around one of the re-airings because that was like the orange splat Nickelodeon. So like 91, 92, something like that.
But yeah, exactly. Like it was definitely like a rerun later after it aired. Like they kept rerunning it around Christmas.
All the more reason I'm astonished that I never saw this before because I religiously watched cartoons as a kid and have taped a ton of shit off of Nickelodeon that time. And somehow I've got the original airing of Nicktoons.
Wow.
Yeah, that I'm sure people have uploaded and got taken down.
When Nicktoons started on a Sunday morning, I got to watch like the first little cartoon of Doug, and then I got dragged to church, and I was so fucking mad.
Lousy God.
We fought our parents on the first airing of Ren and Stimpy, and my parents took one look at what was going on Ren and Stimpy, and they were like, y'all cannot watch this.
I didn't have cable growing up. So, like, I didn't get to watch, like, any, like, good cartoons.
So you pretty much just got to watch, like, a big comfy couch.
Are you ready? Are you ready to clown around? With Petunia and Molly, I'll clown her dolly on the big comfy couch.
Oh, I think I do remember the
fucking nightmare fuel.
Let's do the clock dance.
Let's not.
I think this is the highest quality pilot we've ever watched on this podcast.
Mm.
I didn't have to squint. I didn't have to pause. I could see it all the way through. It was great.
It wasn't in 180p, which is generally what we're fucking dealing with.
There's another version of this that's up on YouTube that's been up for 6 years, and it has 14,000 views.
That has the clock running at the top for some reason, which is very strange. It's on the TV right now. The quality is not that bad, really.
This one's slightly lower quality, but I think it's practically exactly the same. Like, it has the same bumpers and everything.
Mm.
And the uploader is Joffrey Darby, and he's
a proper British bloke.
He's a Canadian screenwriter.
He's a proper Canadian bloke.
He worked on a few Nickelodeon shows and was the host of Double Dare in the pilot episode.
Oh, shit.
Oh, fuck. Wow.
If you're not starstruck enough by that, he's now the executive vice president of programming at the Weather Channel.
That is fucking awesome. That is like a dream gig. What are we going to show today on the Weather Channel?
Oh, someone's going to get their 398 subscriber here in a moment.
He's posting fucking B-roll from the weather.
He's only got 8 videos uploaded, and that includes the horrible Nickelodeon Thanksgiving special, which is just unwatchable.
God, I forgot about
that. Oh yeah, I saw that one.
And a whole bunch of Hey Dude outtakes.
Oh fuck.
Yeah.
I hated that show.
That's the fucking worst
God,
show.
God, I hated Hey Dude. Hated it. Of course I watched it, but Jesus. Yeah.
I think I like it better than, what was that other show that was comparable to it? That was like another like.
Camp on a Wanna. It makes me wanna fart. Salute Your Shorts.
Salute Your Shorts is
I
great.
Love Salute yeah. Your Shorts.
I think you had to suffer through Hey Dude to get to that.
You did, yeah.
Knew what they were doing.
You guys know that Danny from Hey Dude, the Native American gentleman, he's disappeared. Nobody knows where he is.
Oh, God.
Like, how long?
They did a reunion. This has got to have been more than 10 years ago. And the cast members are there and they're like, we don't know where Danny is. Nobody's heard from him. He's dropped off the map.
Wow.
So Danny, if you're out there, send us an email, let us know you're okay.
Yeah, he's probably just like living a good life. Tattertown.
First thing we get, the Bakshi Animation Presents banner, which is very nice, very Rocko's Modern Life looking,
very Chris Filewski.
Yes.
Yeah, I was about to say, this is definitely like when I was like, okay, this has got ties mm-hmm. to
yeah
definitely. So then we go straight into a still storybook exposition dump with some great ragtime music accompaniment.
Yeah, great music.
It's love ragtime.
It's great for the ragtime fans.
Ragtime?
Hit us up at hashtag ragtime and tell us about your ragtime.
What's your ragtime look?
I feel like the ragtime look is too scary to try to pull off these days.
With a little bowler hat and a patch.
You got your bimble.
We learn all about Debbie and her stuffed animals, Dog and Miss Moffat.
Let me tell you a story about a girl named Debbie who loved her stuffed doll, Dog, and little Miss Moffat.
She seems like kind of like an Elmira type.
Yeah, she's smothering.
She looks like a cross between Betty Boop and that little fucking dog that she hung out with, who I can only think of as Fufale. shout out to Fufale.
That was actually her boyfriend, the dog.
Damn, that bitch a freak.
Was it? Wait.
I can't remember his name. Bimbo.
No. Was it Bimbo?
Yeah, that was his name.
Well, she was fucking her dog?
Well, Betty Boop was originally a dog, too.
Oh, okay.
But they got rid of that because, I mean,
it was too sexy.
Then you want to fuck a dog, but it's okay.
Look, it was the Depression.
Yeah, there wasn't enough pussy going around during the Depression, so they had to resort to fucking their dogs.
The great pussy shortage of 1929.
Please, ma'am, may I have a crumb of pussy?
She was always dressing her up, sometimes just for fun. For her fun, not Muffet's.
Debbie loves hanging out with her stuffed animals, and she likes dressing up Miss Moffat, but Miss Moffat doesn't like it, and being inanimate, she can't really do anything about it. And then one day, they find a magic book in the attic and get sucked into the book, and then they all land right in the middle of a card game / tea party between a pink elephant and a top hat wearing insect.
Dog, you're alive! And Goody, where are we, Dog?
They're in Tattertown.
I love that this entire story is told in like three drawings without.
Yeah, I was super confused.
Baffling.
I thought it was kind of efficient. We don't have to spend a whole bunch of time talking about how they got there. We're just there.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. We don't have to watch Uncle Ben die or Batman's parents get killed again.
This podcast is very anti-origin stories.
We're anti-Uncle Ben on this. And not just the one from Spider-Man. We're against the rice guy, too.
Aunt Jemima as well.
Yeah.
If we don't show Batman getting his parents killed, because it was his fault every time.
He dragged him to that fucking theater.
We had to go see our American cousin.
They didn't want to go.
Got him.
Say, baby, are you okay?
Miss Moffat landed next to a giant red talking saxophone.
Played by
motherfucking David.
The great Keith motherfucking David.
Evil, 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 evil. Evil, evil, evil. Evil.
Greatest, the silver tongue devil. He is the... Yeah.
Yeah, people fucking suck Morgan Freeman's cock. You never get that same thing with Keith David.
Because the vibrator is a very powerful thing, man. Very powerful.
But he is 10,000 times more interesting, and his voice is just like so much more velvety smooth than Freeman's.
Mm-hmm. Seriously, unironically, one of my favorite actors who's ever lived. Keith David.
Absolutely.
I will have to kill you.
100%. Check out The Thing.
He is the narrator of the show.
Yeah, it's weird that he's called Miles and he's a saxophone.
A saxophone?
John just doesn't have the same ring.
It's true.
Charlie.
Are you okay?
Okay. Okay. I am terrific!
And she runs through the streets screaming and falls to her knees, crying with joy.
I'm free! I'm free! No more Debbie! I'm alive. I'm alive. I can talk. I can touch. I can feel.
And then Debbie spots her, and she runs for her freedom again.
Miss Moffat is Mr. Moffat.
Oh, you thought it was a male?
No, I mean, he is a male.
But she's got the Homer Simpson 5 o'clock shadow mouth.
That's right.
He doesn't want to be a doll anymore. I feel like he's a trans character, quite honestly. This is, of course, my own interpretation. Isn't there a baby on Robert Rabbit? You know, the famous...
Oh, Robert Rabbit. Yeah, of course.
Isn't there that baby? Like, Baby Huey or whatever? Like the
Baby Herman.
Yeah, Baby Herman.
Baby Herman.
Got a 50-year-old lust and a 3-year-old dinky.
All this stuff was probably, like, in the zeitgeist at that time. I think it all probably comes from kind of the same place. I thought it was Miss Moffat was her name, so I just figured she was a female character.
No, it's definitely, like, I think, you know, like, I think she's just living her life. That's my take, though. Like, I feel like there's some struggling gender identity out there.
I just want to pause it here. We are supposed to think that Moffat is the bad character and Debbie is the good character, but it's really the complete opposite.
You think so?
Absolutely.
I completely agree.
Moffat just wants to live her life, and Debbie will not leave her alone.
Debbie's just horning for that dog, just like Betty Boo.
She's telling everybody what they need to do and how they need to think, and she's just like a really shitty character.
Yeah, like, they don't want to live in the human world. They live in Tattertown.
Exactly.
She's also trying to introduce Christianity to them, which I think is abhorrent.
Yes.
Tattertown! Tattertown! Tattertown!
There are these little people on a stage that keep showing up, and they're screaming, Tattertown! And they're really creepy. At this point, they show up and yell,
you got that weird little upside down man who's very well designed.
Very Fleischer.
Yeah.
There is, like, some great character design in this and some really bad character design as well.
Every character that comes onto the screen is interesting in its own way.
Yeah.
But also kind of confusing too. Because there's so many times something just wanders onto the screen and explodes, and then they just move on to something else.
It's hectic in Tattertown. What do you think Tattertown's main economic draw is? Like, how are they making their money in Tattertown? Whoa.
Rich kids who read books.
Yeah, they're going to ransom that girl.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, clearly Miles is ill in age.
Hey, my name's Miles, and I'm just doing what I like best, keeping time with the blues.
So now the real show starts, and we properly meet Miles, who's the red saxophone. He's our cool, omniscient narrator jazz man.
This is the place where everything you've ever lost winds up.
Is my virginity in Tattertown? Because I lost that a while ago. I was wondering if I could get it back.
So then we see a stereotypical Irish cash register police officer write a ticket to a mechanical toy soldier who has wound down and stopped on train tracks.
There'll be no loitering on the public trolley tracks of Tattertown.
So I have a theory on this, because I was like, fuck, is he a cash register? And I realized he might be a chest of drawers, which would make him Chest of Drawers, like O'Drawers, like an Irish surname.
Oh my god.
Chest O'Drawers. It's just stupid enough.
No, he's a cash register because it's about police corruption.
That was my first thought, yeah.
I thought he made a sound. He made like a cha-ching sound.
I guess we'll find out when you edit that in here.
Don't be nervous, no. 'Tis me public duty.
Then a streetcar being driven by Oswald the Lucky Rabbit shows up and the cop explodes. And all of his pieces wander off the screen.
I hate when that happens.
That's really dark.
It's all very Iron Giant here. Yeah.
The machines will rise, though. You know that.
An amazing thing happens to some of the things that find their way here. They become alive.
And the street post he's leaning on walks away. We're in a bar, and it's full of awesome vintage-style cartoon characters hanging out and drinking.
My absolute favorite guy in this entire scene is the ape waiter.
Yes, the wobbly noodle.
Yep. It's got to be lifted from a cartoon. Like, that's got to be from something.
Yeah, totally. I mean, it does look extremely familiar, as do many of those characters, even the ones who aren't as... Yeah, I feel like it is too.
We pass by Flip the Frog and Oswald the Lucky Rabbit. They both look really unhappy, and for some reason Flip is crying and like burying his head on the table.
I could have been better than Mickey. Yep. I just didn't have an organization behind me.
This is what I love about this is, like, whereas Toontown and Roger Rabbit is like the happy-go-lucky place where toons find their freedom, this is like end of the rope toons. Like, they're out to pasture. They're not used anymore. This is the 80s. There's no, you know, no reverence for them. And they're drunk and they're unhappy. They still have to be wacky because that's who they are. You know, it's almost like a torture exercise. And they're like, I'm sick of partying all the time.
I'm sick of things walking up to me and screaming in my face. So we're following the ape waiter who's strutting through the bar carrying a drink. Then we're outside and a pink hippo gets thrown through the swing doors right past Miles. And I really like this. Then a spoon with arms and legs steps out and says,
"Get out of here, you bum. What do you think this is? A greasy spoon or something?"
It's a pretty good joke, but a really baffling looking spoon.
Yes.
Yeah, I wasn't sure what that was until I paused
it. It's kind of a ladle, maybe a little. Yeah.
Yeah.
The gravy spoon.
Yes, sir. Tattertown's a cool gig for everybody.
Not for the hippo guy.
Yeah, not for the hippo.
I thought that was a pink elephant who was getting kicked out. And I'm like, he's like the symbol of bad behavior. Why would you kick him out?
Fucking buck wild.
Yoo-hoo, Muffin! Come back! Shame on you for running away.
Debbie and Moffat run through.
I've got a new dress for you to wear.
Yeah! Moffat runs into a fence and tries to climb over. I didn't understand why she felt like she was stopped by the fence, because she could just like walk around it. But anyway, Debbie grabs her by the legs and pulls Moffat back, and she is flung by the fence far into the distance. Next thing we see is Debbie and Dog. They're sitting down on a street curb.
You weren't much help.
I'm sorry.
Dog has like a scream speak voice.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
Could you talk like that for the rest of the episode?
She's the one who's capturing him. He has no vested interest in Moffat.
He's her slave.
Yeah, exactly. Like, it's Stockholm syndrome for that little dog.
This all feels like kind of villainish to me. Like, it's like a supervillain complaining to her henchmen that they didn't capture the other person.
Maybe this is the whole theme of this, is like, oh, this person who's a stranger in a strange land is now trying to impose the idea of Christmas on characters who don't seem like they might believe in Christ.
Oh.
Yeah, especially one very specific character that we'll get to later.
Then we meet Harvey.
Take this and that and this and the right and the left.
He's a little snub-nosed animal creature, not unlike Bimbo from Betty Boop that we were talking about earlier. He is like punching at the air for some reason. Like, he's talking about how tough he is. He punches so hard his arm falls off.
Yeah, it just rips off. It's very strange.
I hate it when that happens.
Harvey, baby, come over here.
Debbie coaxes him over and makes him show her his arm.
What's that behind your back?
She does it very hornily too.
Yes.
She's fucking unsettling. Like, very seductively. It's strange.
She is drawn kind of sexually, honestly. Like, we were talking about how, like, she's like a preteen or whatever, maybe, in this. And it's very much like Natalie Portman in The Professional.
Yeah. Got that flapperish hair.
Yeah.
Yeah. Is this when she says my favorite line of, like, flibbity giblets or something like that? What is it? Yeah.
Flibbity.
bloody gibbet!
Bloody bloody gibbet!
She's just so random.
Why didn't that catch on?
Yes.
Honestly. It did. It's come and gone.
Oh, I just...
Bloody gibbets has had its day in the sun.
Last stop, Tattertown.
That Harvey, you know he's based on?
Who?
Harvey Weinstein. Why do you think he has four arms?
More to grab you with.
She sews back on Harvey's arm, and they talk about how Moppet doesn't want to be her doll anymore.
Hey, have you caught that doll of yours yet?
No, she keeps running away from me. I can't understand why, though. She used to be so nice to me back in the real world.
While a cloud of trash runs by.
Why, I can remember when I got her for Christmas.
What's a Christmas?
What? You mean you don't know what Christmas is? With all this junk lying around here, you must have seen some Christmas stuff.
And, I mean, God, isn't that the truth? Christmas generates an ungodly amount of garbage.
So much trash.
So much.
I pulled up this study from Stanford University. Americans generate 25% more trash during the Thanksgiving to New Year holiday period than any other time of year. The extra waste amounts to 25 million tons of garbage, or about 1 million extra tons per week.
Good God.
Hey, how I choose to eat Andy's mints is none of your business. And if I want to just eat as many and create as much trash as possible with them, that's my Christmas gift to myself.
'Tis the season.
That's the First Amendment right there. Freedom to create trash.
Mm-hmm. If I want to drink 2 gallons of bucket of Christ's blood, then I'm gonna do it.
Plastic is the reason that we know that God loves us.
I really like this part. A yo-yo walks by. I should probably just quit saying what walks by because things just keep walking by. But Harvey says,
"It ain't junk, it's family."
And he puts his little hat over his heart.
That was the original slogan for Olive Garden.
Olive Garden, we're all family here.
So she finishes sewing on his arm and they decide to go look for Christmas trash. And an apple pie that sounds like Mickey Mouse yells,
"You do, and I'll give you such a pinch!"
Yeah, what is it, set on Black Friday?
I love the pie character, though. Like, I would watch more of that.
I was really hoping we'd see the pie a lot more.
Very Adventure Time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This is getting to be fun!
Moffat appears and gets hit in the face with an alarm clock, and we cut to inside of a toy store. All the toys and also some small animals are fighting and throwing things, and then they are chasing a large spider with a bowler hat and vest, and the spider is carrying a little person who seems to be in some peril.
Put me down, you big brute.
Never be proud, beauty.
And Moffat comes in and screams,
"Stop! Can't you see the spider's trying to work?"
I feel like the spider looks very familiar to me.
Yeah, spider's definitely early Disney Fleischer kind of spider look.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
He's extremely similar to the spider in Bible Goes West.
Ooh.
I'm a good-looking spider, you know?
Oh, man, this came before that, too.
No,
did
it?
Yeah.
Fievel Goes West, not...
Not American Tail,
I think Fievel was 86?
91, I think? Oh, that was
original.
American Tail.
Yeah, American Tail.
The original. The original. The original was 83, because it was like...
No.
The first movie I ever saw in the theater.
It was like 86, because I was in kindergarten. And I remember it very clearly.
If you know what year the American Tail came out, please text your answer to *3645.
Bible Goes West was 91. American Tail was 86.
Okay, 86.
I probably shouldn't announce this because it is probably somebody's actual screen name still, but I know a guy whose name on something is Fievel Knows Best. That is hilarious to me.
That's very good.
Over this stump.
Colonialism, man.
What
the fuck?
For some reason, she doesn't stay there. She stomps off down the road, and the spider is following her.
That was great. Just great. I've been trying to take over Tattertown for years, but never like that.
What kind of a crazy place is this anyway? Can a person be evil in peace?
Hey, come with me to the dead.
And And we zoom out of Tattertown and see that it's surrounded by a desert.
I kind of knew this was set in Vegas.
And a few miles away, there is a giant toy drummer soldier statue that, like, toy planes are buzzing around.
Yeah.
I thought this was cool. I was hoping this thing would, like, come to life and, like, march around like a Megazord or something.
What's the Air Force budget on the Deadster side?
They actually do get $1 billion a year from the United States government.
The Deadster Zone. Hang out for war toys, TV sets, and other unsavory characters.
TV sets.
The TV sets thing baffled me a little bit.
Yeah.
The war on media in Tattertown, they obviously need some sort of, like, education as to what's going on.
I mean, we are watching this on TV.
Mm-hmm.
That's just him being subversive, honestly, though.
That's exactly what it is. Bite the hand that feeds you.
It's like the Simpsons making fun of Fox all the time.
It's wonderful to think for ourselves again.
You said it, sister.
You are watching Fox.
We are watching Fox.
Speaking of Simpsons, there's a lot of Simpsons alums in this show, too. Two of them.
Are there?
That's a lot. Jim Reardon and Rich Moore, both involved in this.
Yeah. I knew Reardon's name was familiar. Mm-hmm. I could not place it, though.
Yeah.
And didn't bother to look it up.
He wrote 37 episodes of The Simpsons, including Mr. Plow.
Call Mr. Plow. That's my name. That name again is Mr. Plow.
Wow. Is that second to Schwarzwelder?
Oh, yeah.
I don't know.
Was Schwarzwelder wrote 48? 49, 52?
Something like 52 is what I'm coming to my brain.
Oh, you did O'Brien, right?
Not that many, actually.
Three, yeah. He wrote Homer the Heretic.
The Monorail.
The Monorail. And one other, I believe.
Homer Goes to College, I think?
Yes, yeah. Homer Goes to College.
Yeah.
I was hoping that he did the Silent, or Bob, not the Silent Bob one, Sideshow Bob.
Actually, I think I saw that Jim Reardon wrote that one.
Oh, really? Oh, it's all very Conan humor.
You might be wrong. I might be completely wrong. I thought I saw it on the list of his.
I mean, regardless, it's all, like, still same staff of writers. And, like, there's definitely some Conan jokes in there, if nothing else. Because, like, the angry Dean.
No, he directed it and Conan wrote it.
Oh, there you go.
There you go.
Yeah, okay.
Glad we got that cleared up.
God. If someone's going to be listening to this and be like, God, you fucking idiots. It was Conan.
They're just fucking fuming.
Yeah.
Yeah, go ahead and hit us up at our Twitter.
Yeah.
Inside the statue, the spider introduces her to his Deadster Zone soldiers.
These are my Deadster soldiers. Pretty impressive, eh?
Impressive? These rust buckets? I've seen Jell-O with more backbone than these guys.
They look like a bunch of sleepy rockets and bullets.
They kind of look like fire hydrants to me, but yeah, they're definitely bullets.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Well, they have like arms, so they're like pointed with arms, so I could definitely see fire hydrant, yeah.
I suppose yous could do better.
You better believe it, Handball. I had him kicking his stuffings out of Tattertown all day long. We'd be showing those little squirts who runs this place, Muffet the Merciless.
And all the rockets and the bullets start cheering. And while she's doing this speech, there's an American flag behind her. So it's kind of...
Yeah, it's a direct reference to Patton.
Cartoons love to bring up Patton. I didn't know anything about Patton until Tiny Toons.
This flag, I just want to point out, has this star that's bleeding into the stripes, which I think is just absolutely fantastic. All the stars are crooked, and she definitely gives a bit of a little bit of a salute when
I see that.
Her arm raises up very straight. Yeah.
And then you see her like at almost like a lectern.
Mm-hmm.
It's very triumph of the will.
Yes.
Jesus Christ.
It isn't that surprising because, like, Ralph Bakshi loves to bring up the Nazis.
Hey, he's Jewish, and
he invokes the Nazis a lot.
He was actually born in the country that should still be known as Palestine when it was Palestine in 38.
I did not
really.
Yeah,
I thought he was born in Brooklyn.
Nope. He was born in Palestine.
Interesting.
Then we see a few of them jump up and down with joy till they just disintegrate into nothing. And Moffat glares at the pile and taps her foot.
Just not approved.
Needs to get these guys into shape.
Christmas in Tattertown will be right back after these messages.
Then we get the first of the two Nickelodeon commercial bumper breaks.
Yes.
The first one features a crazy Moog version of Good King Wincelot that I really like. And the orange Nickelodeon logo is a snowflake.
Yeah, that's a classic.
Very classic.
That's like burned into my
head. Classic. Yeah, yeah. And that voice.
The first kids network.
We come back from the commercial. Debbie has the whole town searching for Christmas memorabilia.
That's right, everybody. Now keep searching. We'll find something.
And we see all kinds of weird characters running around and riding each other.
And riding each other.
They're definitely riding each other. Yeah, they're inside of each other.
Oh, God. This is taking a very Fritz the Cat turn.
Anything goes in Tattertown.
It's a non-stop orgy.
Hello, Debbie.
So then we see a Reef wearing a fedora whisper to Harvey like he's a character from a noir film.
Yeah, it's very strange.
Are you guys looking to do merch? Because I think you should recreate that Reef and then sell it for Christmas time.
Good idea.
He asks Harvey if he wants to buy a cigar.
Psst. Hey, buddy, come here. How'd you like to buy a cigar?
And then Debbie grabs the Reef and shrieks with delight.
We have one of these on our front door. When friends and relatives come over, we'd open the door, and a little flurry of snow would fall off the Reef.
Somebody do something. Debbie is leaking.
Mm-hmm. Been there.
I'm sorry. I just thought about Christmas and got a little homesick, that's all.
I wish you would go home. Everybody would benefit from just going the fuck home. Just go home, Debbie.
Debbie doesn't seem like she really wants to go home.
No, she doesn't. And she's been here, what, hours at least, and hasn't eaten, hasn't slept. She's just like in this fucking surreal cartoon hell world.
As a child who was a big fan of being very bossy, I understand where Debbie is coming from. Does it make it right? No.
That is the understatement of the century.
Wait, what?
I was a bossy child.
Whoa. Oh, is that what you're saying about me?
No.
I'm really going to give it to you.
What you've told me about your childhood and your bossiness.
I was so bossy as a kid.
You were the most bossy person I've ever heard of in my life. You were like fucking Mussolini if they were fucking 3 feet tall.
I know. Imagine if I had ever gotten any real power.
Oh,
still time.
Jesus Christ. Imagine.
Yeah.
So Debbie is crying her eyes out, and Harvey says,
"You still haven't told me what Christmas is."
And a frog, or maybe a bag of trash.
It is a bag.
It has like a very thick Russian accent, and it says,
"Well, it can't be very nice, or she wouldn't be crying."
Point. I know it's kind of on a Russian to give you the hard truth.
Bleak, dark truth.
Oh, no. Christmas is the most wonderful time of the year. Christmas is caroling in the snow and candy canes.
And while she is describing this, we see the Tattertown people having like a warped vision of Christmas.
Yeah.
And it kind of gave me like Nightmare Before Christmas vibe.
It really did.
Like maybe Christmas can't or shouldn't exist in Tattertown.
They must have ripped this off for that dog shit movie.
Hey, they took like 5 years to make that movie, so maybe not.
Nonetheless, they all get excited and dance around while Christmas music plays. A fly is watching all this in binoculars.
Oh, I thought it was a mosquito.
It might be a mosquito.
I thought it was Watto from episode 1.
Yeah.
Yes.
My trick's gonna work on me. Only money.
Making another appearance on this podcast, Watto.
Hey, you want the girl, huh?
But what about the small boy who rides the cart very fast?
You know, business is business, huh?
So he's watching this fly thing, and Miles tells us,
Muffet's emissary, the fly,
beats a path back to the Deadster Zone with the glad tidings.
He calls her his adversary, but he would be her like companion or like...
Wait, does he say adversary? Does he say emissary?
Muffet's emissary, the fly.
I don't even know what that fucking means, and that makes me mad.
It's the guy that get kicked to the pit in the best movie ever made, 300. He's the emissary.
Oh, he emissary go in the pit. That makes total sense now.
Hey, to kick him in the pit because it's Sparta.
Emissary go in the pit.
So the fly goes back to the Deadster Zone to report. It goes into the statue, and Moffat is beating a pipe with a monkey wrench for some reason.
That's how they communicate in jail.
I thought she was hitting her hand.
I don't know. She's just swinging a monkey wrench for all she's worth for some reason.
That's some Danzig shit. Just throwing some bricks in my yard. No big deal.
If you're gonna crush my hands, use a monkey wrench. Cut that out.
I'll just put in the real thing.
Yeah, dub that over.
Normally, I just find an instrumental version and I put it under Joe, and it works really well. The fly whispers in Moffat's ear that they are having Christmas in Tattertown.
Well, she's pro Christmas? You think she'd
be? No, she is anti Christmas.
Fuck yeah, she is, because she's a toy.
Yeah. She doesn't want any of that.
These toys are discarded Christmas toys.
Another thing, I didn't mention this, in the vision that the citizens of Tattertown have of Christmas, they imagine people being unwrapped and then hugging them, as opposed to them being unwrapped by people. Mm-hmm. Which is very strange.
Very subversive.
Yeah, it's the propaganda machine. Let them think that humans are their gift.
I gotta stop it!
Come on,
so this is when we get to meet Ted and Wendell, which I think is their names. They are Moffat's spies. I do not know what they are supposed to be.
One of them looks like a machine gun with a sombrero.
He looks like an old-timey telephone.
Yeah, voiced by John Wayne, apparently. I don't know. Yeah.
Good. And we can weigh some teddy bears while we're at it.
Oh, tisk, Tad. Don't be so antisocial.
I think he's the lamp from Brave Little Toaster. He's just had a hard couple years.
And these two are connected by like an umbilical cord for some reason.
Yeah, that really baffled me.
What the fuck are these things supposed to be? I was very confused by Ted and Wendell.
Do you like the underlying, the undercurrent here that John Wayne is trash? So that's good.
That is correct.
That is correct.
I want you to sneak into Tattertown and find out what kind of Christmas they're planning to have.
I think it's just pure consumer Christmas.
I think so, too.
Yeah, it's definitely not the overly serious Orthodox Christmas.
They seem very focused on opening presents and decorating.
It's Mormon Christmas.
And being sad.
Everyone is constantly crying from this point on.
I mean, growing up secularly Catholic, Christmas is definitely, for me, just an American holiday and not so much any kind of connotation to anything else.
Well, it's the birth of my savior.
Oh, your savior, huh? Your savior.
Getting into, like, sectarian arguments on here. Chris is a Lutheran, and I am a Methodist.
We all know who's the better one.
Yeah.
This may be my favorite sequence in the whole thing.
Yes.
Debbie and Harvey, they go into a bookstore. A book with the words View 1935 NRA starts yelling at them.
Hey, look at me. I've got pages out of history and on sale, too. Come on, guys.
The book falls on the floor and a bunch of stuff from the 1940s starts leaping out of the pages, like a warship and sailors dancing with women, and then a gangster that's a dog.
They're a dog gangster, yeah. Robbing the bank.
Is this book a real book? Like, is it referencing like a book that was actually in the 40s, or is it like Life magazine?
Yeah, it's actually a very famous book that we've all read. I guess you just missed it.
Oh, was it Mein Kampf? Yeah, I wouldn't read that.
This sequence is all an allusion to an old Looney Tunes cartoon called Book Review. Are you familiar with this one?
Yeah.
Very much in this vein, and it's just as wacky and has like the singing Bing Crosby microphone that it looks very much like the 1930s microphone guy. Yeah.
See, that does sound familiar now that you're saying.
So we've got a dog that robs a bank and the background kind of comes to life. And then a G-Man comes out of the pages and shoots a Tommy gun. He's wearing a badge that says G-Man too.
Yeah, the best joke in the entire fucking show.
Yeah, because honestly, it's just these children who obviously, like, if this was the audience, doesn't know what the fuck that is. I barely know what the fuck it is.
They get all of these references. So he's shooting a Tommy gun, and it's, like, right on beat with the snare drum to the music, which is kind of cool. And then he pulls out a plate of spaghetti and says,
I love Italian food.
I love Italian food.
I do, too. I ate a bowl of spaghetti at a strip club recently, and it was really good.
Oh.
Spaghetti should be whipped out anyway.
It was the strip club where I work as a stripper.
Aww.
I thought it was part of the buffet. You brought it.
I really want to write a review of a strip club buffet. Yeah.
They call it legs and spags.
What's a spag? Is it almost an egg?
Spaghetti.
I love that there's no option. It was all like, watch this burlesque show and eat a bunch of spaghetti in the dark.
That's so strange.
Olive Garden. We're all family here.
A microphone tries to sell the book to Harvey, and he just says, gee, and walks away.
Cool.
And that's the end of that.
Yeah, I was super confused the entire time. I was like, this is on a tangent. Like, I don't even know what to bring up because it's all over the place.
So much happens, and it happens so fast. It's kind of exhausting.
Yeah, I like grading things as a kid, but like, I would debate whether or not I would have found this like good objectively as a child.
I believe that I hate it.
Yeah, I don't think I liked it very much, but it's not like it was on that much for me to form an opinion about.
No.
Yeah, and I watch so much garbage. Like, there's plenty of things that I watch that I didn't really like due to just limited whatever.
Oh god, yeah. Snorks.
I was so religious about watching Nickelodeon. I just watched anything that was on Nickelodeon, like late into the night, watching like Mary Tyler Moore Show and stuff, you know?
I watched a lot of Monkees.
Oh hell yeah.
Oh my god.
But I would be watching stuff on Nick at Night that I hated. It just never occurred to me to like change the channel.
That there might be something else.
Me too, man. We've talked extensively about how much I hated most of what was on Nick at Night.
I love American sitcoms. When I moved to the States, I was like, this is all I know. Brady Bunch, Bewitched. And like Leave It to Beaver for some reason, including the 90s reboot of Leave It to Beaver that doesn't make a ton of sense.
Life in the 90s.
I got it.
Cleaver style. Leave It to Beaver.
Ward, I'm worried about the beaver.
So then we meet Mr. Tannenbaum.
Yes, sir.
It was a potted tree with wheels wearing a bowler. And a thick New York Jewish accent.
Yes, sir. The only actually Jewish character in this entire thing. We made it.
We made it.
This is actually his store.
So you're Tannenbaum. We've got a proposition for you. How'd you like to be the official Tattertown Christmas tree?
I think that's insulting, honestly, to ask Mr. Tannenbaum.
Well, this child clearly has never met a Jewish person in her entire life.
Christmas tree? Hey, what do I know about Christmas? I'm a shopkeeper. I sell comic books. You want to buy a nice magazine?
I know nothing of Christmas because I'm just a shopkeeper.
Right.
Which is a very, very, like, subtle dig, I suppose. Even Bakshi himself was Jewish, obviously.
To mind her own fucking business. Yeah. That's the whole, like, the moral of the story here. Debbie is getting into everybody's shit right now. And that isn't cool.
I thought this was even worse. They appeal to his vanity?
It's a little puny, maybe, but with some new soil and plant food.
Hey, listen, Buster, I was a 10-foot pine since before you was stuffed!
And then they tell him that there's no competition, and he immediately agrees.
But there's no competition.
Nope. Hooray, hey! Well, Missy, you've talked me into it. Where do I sign, huh?
What is that about?
I believe in that. I went to the, like, beard and mustache championship, the world one in Anchorage one year, and, like, only two people signed up for the Fu Manchu. So that literally means anybody could have showed up with a Fu Manchu and gotten bronze, at least.
Wow. We're doing it.
I mean, I would have maybe tried to grow out my mustache to win that. It would have been very difficult. I may have gotten extensions.
Please don't. Please don't.
So you're saying the sweetest victories are the ones that take no effort?
Yeah.
That's for me, yeah. I was raised by a television, though, so, like, I don't know what perseverance is.
It sounds like you need to watch a little film called Remember the Titan.
Who is your daddy?
The dog tries to pee on the tree, and he stops him.
Hey, and tell your canine friend here not to get any doggy ideas, okay?
He's got a little patchwork penis.
Somebody else's trash penis that fell into the world.
Thrown away.
I mean, Lorena Bobbitt.
Yeah, really.
Oh my God.
They recovered that. He got it back. No harm, no foul.
Back and bigger than ever.
And then he did porn after that.
A pretty big penis.
I need to actually look at that porn now, I guess. Was it called Frank and Dick? Because that's what I would have called it.
You have to.
Only 90s kids remember John Bobbitt's huge penis.
I don't think I've ever laughed so hard in my life when I was told about that in the lunchroom. Like, what? I couldn't even fathom something like that happening.
Well, I know what we're doing later, Joe. Get ready. Get ready.
Cutting off my penis.
Oh, no.
Oh, I thought you were just talking about cutting off the penis later. But
you always wanted to be famous.
That's
right?
What I thought you said. Yeah.
I was like, fuck, I shouldn't have sharpened those scissors. What am I thinking?
Ted and Wendell are on the prowl, looking for Debbie's big Christmas experience.
Ted and Wendell, the two abominations that are connected via umbilical cord, are wandering around, and Wendell is overcome by the beauty of a flower and stops to smell.
Oh, look, Ted. Isn't this flower beautiful?
And since they are connected, Ted has to stop too. So he comes back and screams in Wendell's face.
You idiot! You moron! You just blew our cover!
Which was very Ren and Stimpy-esque. And Ted shoots the flower with his nose.
Come on.
Yeah, that makes sense.
And then Wendell cries and plants a new flower.
Where do you get that other flower?
It kind of sets up what's about to happen.
Now, before I teach you to carol, we have to decorate Mr. Tannenbaum.
So they're putting the wreath that's alive onto Mr. Tannenbaum, who is also alive, and Ted and Wendell appear.
I'm gonna waste them.
Oh my goodness! Oh my goodness! It's lovely! It's like an act of love!
But Wendell is once again overwhelmed with the beauty of Mr. Tannenbaum and the wreath creature hanging on his face.
What a sight.
Has anyone ever put a wreath on a Christmas tree? That is such a strange activity to do.
Oh, I bet somebody has.
Bizarre behavior.
There's probably an entire Pinterest section.
Every Christmas thing has been shoved into every other Christmas thing so many times.
Like a turducken.
It's the tree turducken.
No! Wendell, hey, stop! Hey, yo, oh, oh, you'll overload! Whoa!
Beautiful.
Wendell runs headlong at the tree, and he's dragging Ted along, who is screaming, "Be careful, you will overload."
Baffling.
I don't know what that means. It's because I don't know what they're supposed to be. They're umbilical cord like rubber bands, and they end up landing on the tree and making it glow.
Yeah, becoming a halo.
Yeah, they're like halo. They're like Christmas lights. It's very strange. Does not make any sense.
Yeah, but it's like, oh, you know, at the end when everybody's happy and the thing glows,
the reef has a not gay moment where he's like,
the guys at the pool see this. I'll never live it down.
No homo
bro guy. I'm just sitting on a Jewish tree's lap.
Reef is actually like cradling Ted and Wendell in either arm.
Fellas, is it gay to cradle your friends who are a machine gun and a bizarre lamp?
I think it's an old crank telephone.
Yeah, definitely. Old honk honk.
It is a telephone.
I do not know what Tad is supposed to be at all.
I remember my old phone that had shoes.
He's got a gun for a nose. Is like the rest of his body supposed to be like the butt of a gun? But why does he have wheels?
I think it's a machine gun or a Tommy gun, but it doesn't make sense that he's a cowboy.
No, it's a Gatling gun. I mean, that's what you put on a Gatling gun, which is a cowboy thing.
Well, maybe he was raised in Montana.
Terrortown.
And he went to World War I, and then he was blinded by mustard gas, and his brother had to bring his still beating heart back to to Tattertown.
There's an awful lot of World War One references in this too. The Deadster Zone soldier hat is like,
oh, because of the bombers, the planes or whatever.
World War One, I don't know that they had bombers.
They had the Red Baron. They dropped pizza all over Europe.
Oh my god. I want some tater tots and I want some pizza stat.
Not bad for a first attempt.
Not bad. It's perfect.
All the guys are hanging out on Mr. Tenenbaum's face. and Harvey declares it's perfect. Aww. And now we get the second of our Nickelodeon bumpers. And this one's not as good.
Oh,
just some generic Christmas music. And the Nickelodeon logo is an orange bell. Not as good as the other one. And I think it's just a clip of Santa.
Yeah, it's a really poorly animated Santa. Some of the animation in this is really bad for some reason. I mean, maybe because it was the pilot. But...
Well, and, you know, Ralph Bakshi's notoriously cheap.
Careful.
There are a couple little things, like you see these like cheap looping animations in the background sometimes on the show, and that's very much like recycled from that kind of like just cut the corners, just loop it. I mean, these animators that, you know, worked on this are very huge filmographies. This is, you know, you ask them about this one and they'd be like, oh, what the fuck is that?
Yeah, same thing with the voice actors. Mm-hmm. Like, I normally we would be going through talking about this, but like their resumes are just miles long.
That's true.
You're watching Nickelodeon, and now back to Christmas in Tattertown.
We come back from the commercial and Moffat is, this is a very strange moment. She's opening a safe and taking out a plate of tobacco pie.
My favorite cuisine, tobacco pie. It's the last slice in the house.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Very strange. Strange thing to do.
I thought this was like the ultimate score, almost like the briefcase in Pulp Fiction, right? Like, what's in the safe and it's just tobacco pie.
The cigarette pie, not even tobacco pie.
It's like this disgusting pie that's like stuffed with cigars and cigarettes and it's smoking.
Do you think they had to edit this out when Nickelodeon was starting to rerun it? They're like, oh, this tobacco pie, it has to go.
The story wouldn't make any sense.
Yeah, this is really what keeps it all together.
It would fuck with the continuity, yeah.
It almost just looks like two pancakes with some mud and cigars in between.
Yeah, diarrhea sticky pie.
That is such a Ren and Stimpy image right there. Those backgrounds, the gradient, the dirt. Yeah.
It really is.
All you need is the coyote howling.
Yeah, or like a oozing pus something. Yeah.
So Moffat is going on and on about how she loves tobacco pie. It's the last one in the house, and she just wants it so bad. And then the fly bursts in the room, knocking the pie onto the floor, and a little furnace creature devours it in one bite. He blows fire and then he poops some gray stuff on the floor.
Oh, I thought he'd come.
It may be. Then Moffat screams and cries, and the little furnace thing with a thick Cockney accent says,
"What? I done something wrong, Mom?"
He's ashamed.
Yeah, that was a part of Christianity they didn't miss, I guess.
Yeah, there's a lot of shame going around in Tattertown.
That's true.
But a part of American Judaism that they nailed.
Yeah, exactly.
The fly is holding a postcard, and it's from Ted and Wendell.
It says, "Dearest Moffat, having a wonderful time. Wish you were here."
And when she turns it over, we get the picture of them sitting in the tree side by side with the wreath. So Moffat is really mad that they are being Christmas decorations, and she punishes the fly for bringing her bad news.
Yeah, kill the messenger.
Also, the fly, I'm just noticing, looks like he's wearing boxing gloves at times.
Yeah, he does.
Little, yeah.
So then she lays down on a Greek column.
Let me rest my head for a moment. It's so hard living with these lower life forms.
Ooh.
Mm-hmm.
This is a eugenics talk, if I ever heard one.
The spider, meanwhile, is in another room, I guess.
Listen to that amateur ranting. Why, the Deadster Zone deserves the talents of a master elocutionist like moi.
Then he pulls a crown out of a treasure chest and puts it on his head, and the jewels in the treasure chest start screaming that he's a thief.
Ah, shut up!
and he slams the chest shut, and then he puts on Moffat's royal garment.
Ah, Moffat's royal garment. Yes, sir. Clothes make the man.
It's true.
Moffat catches him, and he screams and starts shoving everything into his shoe. Then the dresser, who he's been standing in front of, there's a dresser with big eyes. The dresser rats him out and screams.
He's always dressing up in your clothes when you're not home.
And the spider splits the dresser in half with a hatchet.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that's exactly what you do when someone calls you out for cross-dressing.
When one of your roommates calls you out for trying on your other roommate's clothes.
I mean, I do it all the time. I'm constantly putting on Joe's clothes and then just eating spaghetti and I'm spilling them all over it.
I love Italian food.
At the strip club, right?
Yeah. I can't fit into it, though, so very chesty.
Can we talk for a minute, though, about how he gets in this bathtub and it's just clearly like a bathtub full of piss?
I was just trying on this robe here to check it if it had any more damage. Honest.
Yes! What was that? This
neon yellow liquid is just everywhere. Split
it's like
black.
I don't even care anymore.
You know what, Chris? That's valid.
Pissing in the tub?
I didn't say I was judging.
This fucking piss tub is valid.
That is his own tub. That is his own piss.
This isn't the borrowed piss.
It's his own piss. Jesus Christ. That's a lot of piss.
Now it's gross because it's his own piss. It'd be better if it was somebody else's piss.
What are you, just using the tub like a toilet? No one would ever think to do that.
I've never peed in a sink.
No.
Even though it's very difficult for a woman to do.
I've never peed in anything but a toilet. God damn it.
That's a lie.
Yeah.
Lie detector has detected that was a lie.
I've seen it, Joe. I've seen it.
What do you think the first people to have indoor plumbing, like how people felt about them?
You fucking freaks are pissing inside?
Whoa.
You shit in your house? Inside?
That's
your house?
Fucking dumb.
This all really angers Moffat, but then she gets an idea and she starts dressing him up like a reindeer. Like she ties like a horn on his head and then she puts on a Santa suit.
Moffat, why you look like...
Like Santa! Enough to fool those Tattertown twits!
It's like Grinch.
Just like Grinch.
So then we see the two of them on top of the hat of the toy soldier that is the Deadster Zone. And she is riding the spider wearing her Santa suit, and they plunge off the ledge, but at the last moment the fly somehow manages to carry them and they are flying and dive bombing, and all of the rockets and bullets see them and get the idea to follow, and this whole melee is now headed for Tattertown. Cut to Tattertown. And a tiny lumberjack wanders up to Mr. Tannenbaum.
Merry Christmas, everyone! Now it is time we chop him down, no?
And all the people in Tattertown are cheering, and Debbie screams,
stop! You still don't get it. Christmas isn't about chopping down trees or even about gifts.
And they all cry. Christmas is a day where everyone is supposed to be nice to each other for one day. And the lumberjack cries and then says,
good, stand back.
And he swings his axe and Debbie smashes him to pieces with her fist.
Another Christmas miracle.
And the crowd is chanting, blood, 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 blood.
Jesus Christ, Debbie, like, let people celebrate Christmas however they want.
With violence.
So they all look up and see the war toys and TV sets coming to invade, and Debbie cries,
it must be Santa!
Close, but no cigar!
And we see all the war toys flying through the sky, descending toward Tattertown. And I guess Debbie realizes this is, in fact, Moffat, because she yells,
I love you, Moffat!
Then the real Santa shows up!
Ho, 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 ho! Merry Christmas!
Very strange.
Pretty random. Moffat decides to fight Santa instead, and she tries to turn all the toys around, which causes a collision. And we see a helicopter say to a bullet,
oh, I get it. Moffat wants us to attack each other.
That Moffat is such a genius.
I specifically remember this, and I remember thinking this was really funny. All the toys just immediately start kamikazing each other and exploding, which is really great. The little Harvey is jumping up and down, and he says,
"All right, this is Christmas. I love aerial dogfights."
Yeah, he's just very confused about what Christmas is still.
This is my Christmas now that I've watched this. Tobacco pie.
Yeah, I'm going to watch this every year.
Then Santa yells,
"Yee-haw! I haven't had this much fun since Big Alley."
No idea what that means.
What? Is that a World War One reference?
It is. I don't know. I don't
Jesus,
know it.
Is it? Let me look it up.
Mig Alley, I think. And that is
Whoa.
Is that Korean War? Yeah.
Wow.
Whoa. I didn't catch that at all. Boxy, man. Wow.
I'll attack Solo. Why do I need an army anyway? Burn Solo!
Dives bomb towards Tattertown. Debbie says,
"No, no. This is all wrong."
Again, Debbie sucks. Let people celebrate Christmas however you want.
Let people do violence.
She goes over to a Victrola record player, and we are treated to Irving Berlin's White Christmas. And as it's playing, we see Bosco and Honey kissing in front of a full moon, and a family of squirrels in front of a fireplace. Above their fireplace is mounted a head of a World War One soldier wearing one of those one of those helmets.
A little piss helmet.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah.
How did they kill him?
That might be an allusion to that. There was an old cartoon where there were like a bunch of squirrels, like all the people had died and they were like living in their helmets.
Oh. They fought and they fought and they fought until there was only two of them left. And that was the end of the last man on Earth.
Really dark cartoon.
He did an imperialism. He did a no gross.
I'm going to need to ask you to do better.
So the spider in mid dive bomb starts crying because of the song. And so does the fly. And they pull out a box of soap and stop in midair. And this sends Moffat crashing into a building that is also alive. And it turns out to be a jail cell. The spider has sparkle soap, is like showering the whole town in it, and it turns into like snow. And then we see Moffat in jail with a stocking full of presents, and she's crying, and Debbie says,
"Now I've got you, Moffat. Now you can be my dolly again.
I own you again."
We end with Miles the red saxophone wrapping it up.
Well, as a square cat tells it, that about sums up our Christmas gig for tonight.
I'm not even your friend.
And the curtains come down.
Jacqueline is right.
And the show enjoyed 10 more seasons of excellence.
It really could have. I can't believe they didn't renew that.
That was wild.
That is Christmas in Tattertown.
When you see them, then you'll know it's Christmas.
The year after this, 1989, he did an adaptation of the Dr. Seuss Cold War satire, The Butter Battle Book.
Never heard of that. That's very strange.
It's two countries.
Every zook eats his bread with the butter side down.
We spread our bread right with the butter side up.
They end up like having a Cold War.
Sounds like a familiar allegory.
Dr. Seuss said it was the most faithful adaptation of his work. That is, until the Lorax commercials.
Oh.
The Lorax is here at IHOP. Adults will love the Lorax's green eggs and ham with fluffy whole wheat pancakes. Kids will love pancakes and crispy waffle cones with blueberry topping.
Here you go.
I don't mind if I do.
Make it an IHOP day.
In 1992, he produced the short-lived New Adventures of Mighty Mouse.
Zoom, 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 zoom. Boom, 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 boom.
Another show that I totally remember and watched.
Yeah.
I have heard it said that you could not afford to get the team that made the New Adventures of Mighty Mouse in a room together.
Wow, really? Who was it?
Well, obviously we've got pervert groomer John Kirkfalusky.
Chris Falusky. Yeah.
But we've also got Bruce Timm, who created Batman, the animated series, and
wow,
a slew of other DC shows. Jim Reardon, who we've already talked about, did 37 episodes of The Simpsons and went on to be a screenwriter at Pixar.
Wow.
Bob Jacques, who also has an insanely long career working on every cartoon show you've ever heard of. I mean, it just goes on and on and on. I was typing all these out and I was like, man, it's just no point. Like, pretty much every single person that worked on that show went on to do something, groundbreaking. Yeah. You know, Ralph actually, he said that he just hired talent. Like, he just looked for talent and then let them do what they did best.
Wow.
Which is just sage advice.
Yeah.
And that's how he ended up with that group of people. As far as Kirk Felucci goes, you know, like, I grew up with Ren and Stimpy. It's one of my favorite shows.
It's one of the greatest of all time. There's no question.
You know, he originated the show, but I believe he was fired after the first season.
You're correct, yeah. And he came back to work on the reboot.
Which was awful.
Was it? I never watched
Ren and Stimpy adult party cartoon was really gross. Also, we need to talk about the controversy behind the Mighty Mouse show. Do you guys know about this?
Yes, I do.
So I'm just going to read directly from Wikipedia, the God Honest Truth. On June 6, 1988, Donald Wildman, head of American Family Association, bunch of fucking assholes,
pussies,
alleged that the Littlest Tramp, which was an episode, depicted cocaine use, instigating a media frenzy concerning Bakshi's involvement with Mighty Mouse, The New Adventures. The AFA claims that CBS intentionally hired a known pornographer to do a cartoon for children. Wow. And then allowed him to insert a scene in which the cartoon hero is shown sniffing cocaine. Bakshi's response, which is, you know, typical, like, just bombastic Bakshi, is really great. This is his quote. You could pick a still out of Lady and the Tramp and get the same impression. Fritz the Cat wasn't pornography. It was social commentary. This all smacks of burning books in the Third Reich. It smacks of McCarthyism. I'm not going to get into who sniffs what. This is lunacy.
Wait, is he a communist?
I mean, I don't know if he's a communist, but definitely a lefty.
If you're a communist, come on the podcast.
Bakshi also says, I despise drugs. I would be out of my mind to show a cartoon character snorting cocaine in a cartoon. And stating that Wildman had interpreted the scene out of context, Mighty Mouse was happy after smelling the flower because it helped him remember the girl who sold it to him fondly.
I mean, they don't know what cocaine looks like, obviously, based on the screenshots.
Yeah, it looks like he's snorting gum.
Or somebody's belly button.
Yeah.
Like the inside of their belly button.
Disgusting.
Because of the uproar, they ordered Bakshi to remove the scene, which he went ahead and did. And because he removed the scene, they claimed that
it was an admission of guilt.
Exactly.
What the fuck? What I had always heard was that he sniffed a flower in the way that you would snort cocaine. And I will tell you, that is not how you snort cocaine.
He grabs the flower and then crushes it into a powder and then inhales the powder into his nose.
He could have been heroin because it's a flower. Poppy.
Yeah.
That's true. Poppies, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, that would have been fine.
Cocaine is the bad thing.
He had one last film project, which was Cool World in 1992. Either of you have seen it?
No, I haven't either.
I remember wanting to see it when I was a kid. I was like, ooh, this is racy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was like, ooh, I could break off.
I'm torn between, like, because isn't it real and cartoon in some aspects?
Yes.
Sort of like Roger Rabbit. And then
it's adult Roger Rabbit, which is already pretty adult, honestly, after rewatching it recently.
When I was a kid, I watched it on like Showtime or something, and it was very confusing to me. And I think a lot of Tattertown characters show up in Cool.
Yeah, why waste them? It didn't get picked up.
Really? Really?
The spider I know is in there. It's an unwatchable mess of a movie.
Sounds about right.
The idea of the script was that you had this underground cartoonist who draws a sexy lady who comes to life. The lady originally was called Debbie Dallas, as in Debbie Does Dallas.
Oh my God. That's insane.
Horny. Horny.
This underground comics guy, a very R. Crumb, draws a sexy lady. She comes to life. He has sex with her, and then she gives birth to a half cartoon, half human.
Whoa. Holy shit. Also, if any of those ladies that R. Crumb drew come to life, you motherfuckers better watch out. They're fucking crush your neck with their giant goddamn thigh.
It's this typical Bakshi. It's like clashing, like trying to like shove these two opposites together and like very conflict driven.
He's just like one of the most subversive directors ever. Everything that he did, he tried to incite as much controversy as possible.
We kind of glossed over it, but Coonskin was another one.
Yeah. very subversive, and it was just like a take on blaxploitation genre from
the- It's basically a update of the Uncle Remus tales, Song of the South, set in New York City. It kind of suffered from the same thing that happened, we talked about in 1775 podcast of the Secret Diary of Desmond Pfeiffer,
where they just immediately just decried that it was racist.
Yeah, it had bad press and that tanked it, and it was picketed and people protested.
Down with this sort of thing. Edit in the clip from Father Ted here.
Down with this sort of thing.
Without ever bothering to watch it.
Yeah, that's the way it always goes.
But eventually, the Amsterdam News, which is one of the oldest African-American newspapers in the country and the first to publish Malcolm X, ended up praising it.
Wow. Holy shit. Malcolm.
With Cool World, I think it's got like a 4% on Rotten Tomatoes.
Wow.
If you think that Tattertown is like manic and hard to follow, Cool World is like on another level.
How did it do in the box office? Because this was an actual release, right?
Like, yeah, this was a big movie. I mean,
Kim Basinger?
Oh, God, yeah.
The box office was $5 million. Its lifetime gross was $14 million, barely more than half its reported budget of $28
million. Wow. It was also like released. Peak Brad Pitt being like a brand new hot actor.
Yes.
He was a hot fucking commodity. Cool World is what year now?
92.
And Brad Pitt looks exactly like he does now. He's not aged at all.
I feel like he got better with age a lot. What is that movie? Thelma and Louise.
Oh, yeah.
He looks better 10 years from then.
Yes. Yeah.
Which is the curse that men have.
Yeah, we look better as we get older. It's pretty great. Although he is starting to get a bit of Epstein coconut head now.
Is he like 56, 57?
He's 50 something, yeah.
He looks great for his age, but granted, like they all do because they can afford to.
Yeah, this is just 2 years before he just like absolutely fucking exploded. And he did Interview with the Vampire and Legends of the Fall in the same year. He pretty quickly after Cool World just became the biggest fucking actor in the world other than maybe Tom Cruise.
To think that it was Cool World that really propelled him.
I'd love to think that.
Not only that, but it had an insane marketing campaign as well. As part of the film's promotion, the Hollywood sign was altered. They made it spell Hollywood, W-O-U-L-D.
That's fucked up.
referring to the character in the movie.
Because she doing?
That's what every Hollywood producer would like to hear as well.
The residents of the city sent a letter complaining about it, that they were appalled.
Oh, sure. Yeah, you're in fucking pedophile central and you're fucking offended at that sign. Fuck you.
And they also had a several video games. There was a Super Nintendo game.
Oh, yeah.
There was an Amiga game. There was a Commodore game.
How bad are those?
I don't remember.
We should start a Twitch channel where we play related games to these things.
Pilot games.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, all that is to say that Ralph Bakshi was completely burned out on Hollywood at this point, and he essentially retired. He's put out a couple of little things since then, but nothing really big. I remember he had a short in 2012 that coincided with the election that was pretty cool.
Ooh.
And then his last film was called The Last Days of Coney Island.
I remember that. Yeah. I never saw it.
It is a mindfuck. It is such a trippy fucking movie.
Is it rotoscope?
I don't know if there's much rotoscoping, but he uses a lot of like real photography as like backgrounds and settings, which is really cool. And he basically did it all by himself with like a Macintosh.
You guys are sitting today with the world in your hands. Entire studios are in one box. Bakshi Productions of its ink and paint department. Its lack of special effects. Xeroxing, hand inking, coloring is all done in a box. Four guys get together and make their own movie in a year. That's what I would do if I was young. I wouldn't even get a job. I'd get a couple of computers and a bunch of guys. We'd crap for a year. We'd be millionaires the next year if we did a good film. You sit there crying about getting a job at Disney or things are falling apart. The same thing the old animators were doing when I was a kid. It's all crumbling. It's not crumbling. You're crumbling.
He released that film on his 77th birthday to Vimeo for free and YouTube. So it's freely available. And now Ralph Bakshi, basically, he just paints and sells his paintings on eBay, and his family handles that.
Wow. Did not know that. Tattertown! Tattertown! I think that if you are like just a fan of animation, it's like a masterclass, like a lot of his work, in like creating an homage to the animators that came before you. It's spotty at best. Like a lot of the animation is really bad. The Santa Claus at some point is one of the worst animated things I've ever seen. The girl Debbie, who actually looks like my mom too, whose name Debbie, which is kind of fucking weird.
Your mother does not look like that.
I'll show you pictures of my mom when she was young.
I don't know that the animation is bad.
That's a good point. Not throughout.
Well, if you compare it to what was going on in television animation at the time, which was just like limited animation where, you know, just the mouths move and stuff.
Yeah.
To be doing this much for just a TV special is pretty impressive.
Yeah, you're right.
Because it's all hand-drawn. There's no computers. It's hand-drawn cell animation.
Have you ever seen the actual version of The Thief and the Cobbler? One guy drew every fucking frame.
Mm-hmm.
If you compare it to like the Disney stuff going on at the time when he first started working on it, it's like one of the most astounding achievements in human history. Like, I cannot fathom putting that much work into something. Then it just gets like fucking dumped on by the Weinstein Company.
Yeah. There's a lot of parallels between Richard Williams and Ralph Bakshi.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Both just very independent people.
He was the animation director for Roger Rabbit. He also did the other movie we were talking about, the Adventures of Raggedy Ann and Andy.
Did he really?
He directed that, and the music is done by the guy that does all the music for Sesame Street, which I can't remember his name.
Oh, wow.
Not a great movie.
It's weird. You're right. Like, I don't know if it goes anywhere.
The Pit with all the candy in it.
Ugh.
I remember that when I was a kid, and it used to give me nightmares.
Excuse me. I was asleep. Pardon me.
Another parallel is like Richard Williams, while a phenomenal animator and artist, not as great with narrative. The Thief and the Cobbler, you know, is dazzling, but it doesn't have a strong narrative.
Yeah.
Similar to, you know, Ralph Bakshi, he needed somebody to rein him in, make his stuff work better.
That is the thing with my favorite Bakshi movie that I've seen and probably seen 20 times, American Pop.
Mine too.
Is that at some point the narrative just loses all fucking focus.
Mm-hmm.
Like it just becomes like very boring for a brief period. And by brief, I mean like 20 minutes of the film.
American Pop is definitely within like my top 10, maybe top 5 movies of all time. I love that movie. The narrative is weak as hell, but the art and the ideas are just... It's almost hard to just sit down and watch it all at once. Like, you have to take a break. We'll go ahead and call it.
Yeah, I think I'm fading out.
You got a good line for us to go out on?
Oh, me? Let's see. If I think of something, I'll just record it later.
Okay.
Just slip it in.
Just slip it in?
Just slip it in.
You can just cut that. Just slip it in.
I'm killing it.